It's okay to recognize that people are built differently, shaped differently, exist or think differently in the world. And we don't need to be afraid of that because it is remarkably common.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hello, Kelly. Thank you for coming to the show. It's great to have you here. No one believes me.
No, you're great. It's your brain compartmentalized. That's yes, part of...
Wow, this is such a good conversation.
It's part of supporting someone with different abilities.
I'm definitely one of them. That's for sure.
So, Kelly, tell us a little bit about your path, how you ended up being an advocate and a guide for families with differently abled experiences in their life.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. As you know, everybody either has some sort of disabilities in their house, or we all know people, whether it's adults, kids, like it is out there. And also something I've learned in the journey, and I'm glad you said differently abled because the language is part of it. And I've learned from disabled adults to just say disabled. And so that's something that has been a challenge for me because in thinking about how I came into this world, I came with nothing. Like I knew nothing about any of this. And when you have a kid who is born, and especially very early on, we were thrown into, oh, he is not on a typical path. Oh, he is hospitalized for not eating. He has a feeding tube. He has cortical vision impairment, which when he was diagnosed looked like he couldn't see anything, literally was blind because how his brain was processing. And my previous job was that I got paid to come up with ideas for talking animal movies. And that's actually a job. Who knew?
Right. I like that.
Yeah, right. So much fun. And full steam ahead, left all the other things behind because I had a kid whose needs were exponential. And throwing myself into this world, not knowing anything about disability, much less advocacy or what it looks like or how to secure any of the things, much less what was even available or even what was going on with my child. I have two amazing sons. One is 12 and plays the electric guitar and the tube and builds movie sets out of Legos and that super creative kid. The other one is also creative and hilarious and wonderful and loves airplanes and swimming and all the things. And he has multiple disabilities, including a still undiagnosed genetic syndrome. And within that, there's cerebral palsy, autism, epilepsy, cortical vision impairment, microcephaly, feeding tube, sensory, cognitive, motor. Like, he's like, I'm just going to check all the boxes. I'm just an overachiever.
And he
is all personality all the time. And I feel like I always need to point out that disability is such a huge part of who he is and how he moves through the world. But his personality is actually the number one thing about who he is, as with any kid. We can't separate him from his disabilities, but we also can't not talk about his personality because he's like the mayor of Trader Joe's.
Yeah. So, Kelly, obviously, all those things for your family to come together on, how was that in the beginning? Because the starting point, when I've talked to friends that have gone through this, how did you feel? Were you just overwhelmed? Did you feel alone? Were you
guilty in some way? Like, what was that bag of stuff going on?
Thank you for asking this because I think this is something that so many people don't talk about and are afraid to talk about because for any parent, and I can certainly speak to moms, we feel like all we're quote unquote supposed to say is, oh, this is amazing and I love my baby and parenting is the best. And it can be a hard entry for anyone, sure. Entry into our son's life and into the disability world. We weren't feeling a sense of guilt because I think we were just so smacked with this tsunami of stuff. And I was coming from a place of total ignorance. And it felt, all I was hearing was, I'm so sorry. That's so terrible. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And so I was getting all of these messages that, like, just shoved me down into this bottomless pit that I was helping to dig for myself, because I felt like this is the worst thing that could happen to us, to our family, certainly to our child. And disability is terrible, and I will never feel better. And all of these horrible feelings, which I now realize were me feeling inadequate and me feeling like my first kid, I was such a great mom because I knew how to do all this.
Yeah.
And with my second kid, I was like, I don't know how to do any of this or even get you to eat food, much less figure out what your life will be. And for months and years and all of this, I was in this terrible place of, this is just horrible, because I knew nothing about disability. And also, I loved my baby because he was my baby, but I didn't know him as a person. And it's such a strange thing to be thrown into, because most of us are basically given a diagnosis and told to go home, Google, and cry. Good luck.
And this is so important, Kelly. What were those biggest fears you were feeling? Because I'm sure there's people listening right now. Were there certain fears like, we're not going to be able to provide? Like, were there some fears that just were screaming at the hilltops that you think other families are feeling right now?
Yes, there are so many fears. And also, there's no hierarchy of who is disabled enough and everybody is allowed to feel all the feelings. Our situation sounds extreme because my son has this whole list of things. Even if you are deer in the headlights over your child's learning disability that was just discovered, it's okay to feel the things. We were afraid that our child would be a medical patient who suffers from medical things. And disability doesn't make you suffer, but pain and chronic illness and medical challenges certainly can. And that's a real thing to talk about. We were afraid he would not live a life that was fulfilling to him or to us, or that he would be able to engage in the community and the world around him. When we got his first MRI and there were lots of questions about brain development, and our son was 3 months old, and we asked the neurologist we're sitting across from, will this kid ever see or smile or hold up his own head? And the doctor, very objectively to his credit, said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the not knowing, most of us have not calibrated any expectations of, if my child can't ever hold up their own head, much less sit or stand or walk or hold a spoon or a pencil or clap. So it was this huge recalibration of everything, where everything seemed scary. Finances certainly seem very scary all of a sudden, because you're thrown into this and you don't know what insurance will or will not cover. And it's really expensive to do all of this stuff, even with insurance, even with income stability, even with all the things. And when people ask me what I was afraid of, looking back, honestly, everything.
Interesting.
I can feel that.
Yeah.
We had a daughter born with her skull fused.
Yes.
And when we went through that process, I remember, I mean, I would tell people it was just her skull fused, like 5-hour brain surgery. Like, that's not, it was just, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But it was just once every 3 weeks, an entire day of appointments. It was just monitoring a helmet and making certain that the caretakers could handle 23 hours a day. Don't let her sweat. Don't let her overheat. Don't let her get wet. Make sure we get the fungus, you know, like all the things. And it was just that, you know what I mean? As a mom, because we get so used to what we're doing, it was just that. But I remember every time telling Jim or the caretaker, the doctors, how do normal people do, like, how do people that aren't entrepreneurs and working from home and have a spouse and have sitters to pick up their other children and have an income that pays $100,000 brain surgery? Like, how do you navigate this? Because you're never ready. Nobody's like, oh, I'll wait to have a kid child until I have $300,000 in savings in case they become medically needy.
Yeah.
Right. No, thank you so much for sharing that, because, and as you're saying that, and craniosynostosis, for those of us who know this world, was something of the skull being prematurely fused, is something that was potentially on the table for us and we were examined for that. And I think when you say just, it's not to belittle the enormity of the experience, but I'm guessing you're saying the word just as a qualifier because there is actually a path and there are steps that you take and there is an end when you're like, the skull's good. Like, we are no longer worried about the premature fusion of the skull because we have access to medicine. And it's a huge deal and it can feel all consuming. And like you said, with people who don't have the resources, I was able to leave my job and dedicate myself full time to this. And I'm still learning. And that's the biggest part of why I wrote this book, is because not everyone has access to all of this. And the book touches on, like, what is the foundational stuff that we need to know if we don't have insurance, if we're calling our insurance company, if we are finding medical specialists and need to come up with our own journey. And how do we do this? Because most people don't have the privilege of time, which is a huge privilege. And how do we set each other up with our stories and our information so that we're not reinventing these same wheels?
No, you're absolutely right. There has to be a level of like hustle that goes to, like, you have to be smarter than the thing and know that this plays off of that. And now the book that you're talking about is Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child. That's the name of your book.
Yes.
Comes out in a month from today.
March 12th.
March 12th. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Through 12th. You're almost here.
Yes. So
biggest mistake that you see parents that all of a sudden find themselves in this unexpected situation, they're in limbo. What is the biggest mistake that you see parents making that you'd say, guys, please at least stop doing this and we're going to be able to get you on a better trajectory? Is there anything like that, that we can rise to the top?
Yes. The number one thing, and I did this and I dug in my heels on this one deep, which I should not have done, is isolating. This already feels very isolating. And it can feel overwhelming to reach out and especially to connect with disabled people, adults, organizations, because when you have all these ableist ideas in your head, which I will be outrunning and relearning for forever, it seems like, disabled people are scary. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, if you meet my kid, you're like, actually, disabled people are 0% scary.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have taken me so long to learn. And connecting with other families and other parents and organizations from the beginning allows you to share that mental and emotional load and to get real information that you can use rather than having to reinvent it on your own. It's out there. Let other people give it to you. That will really help.
I love that. I can tell you, in my entrepreneur circles, one of my biggest business coaches ever, Dan Sullivan, said, transformation rarely takes place in isolation. It takes place in positive groups. And that's always stuck with me. When you're working through a problem, isolation can be the absolute most painful thing you can do to yourself, especially for effectiveness.
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life: money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now, imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's passive income playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now, I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The Passive Income Playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time? Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Absolutely. And for all parents, and I love that you brought entrepreneurship into this, support all of us in all things. Parents, even who don't have kids with disabilities, will struggle with many things. And very little in this is brand new, and very seldom are you the first person ever.
So true.
Connecting with other people, even like listen to this podcast while you are pushing your baby in a stroller, and you'll say like, oh, I got information that I did not have before. And then that just lets the air out of the balloon over feeling like I'm on an island figuring this out by myself.
Mm-hmm. And it's overwhelming and isolating too, because you feel like, for me at least, we knew before she was born that there was going to be something different. We didn't know to what caliber. We weren't certain what would need to happen. And I went from being scared to then always like covering, like wearing a hat because she looked different. And I like went from telling nobody, because like I either tell you nothing or I like vomit it all to you. Like, yes, what is this and whatever. And so I was like, no healthy mix of information and education. Somewhere along that path, I moved into the education piece where I thought, if people are looking, they want to know. Or like teaching, we've always taught our children, don't stare, ask. Like, if you are curious, why is their leg different? Like, why don't you say, I was curious. Like, may I ask why your leg is different? Or, oh, how is the wheelchair? Like, anything that you, being curious is so much better than being afraid.
Or ignoring.
Thank you so much. Can we just highlight everything that you guys just said? I think when we were growing up, so many of us were taught, don't stare, ignore, pretend like that person isn't there because they're disabled, or maybe they're not disabled, but their head is built or shaped differently or whatever the thing is. And if you're going through your life and everybody just looks the other way and pretends like they don't see you, that's awful. And no one should have to be in that situation. And like you said, if we are genuinely curious about all other people, we're not certainly not expecting someone to share their private medical information. And we're not going up to my kid and be like, hey, what's wrong with you? No, because we wouldn't do that with other humans. But we get people, especially with his feeding tube, kids will come up to us and say, hey, what's that? With genuine curiosity and curiosity, not like, yes, oh, I pity you, but hey, I'm curious about you. And my son is someone who is very outgoing and very open, and everything about him we share with his consent. Some people are much more private and don't want to discuss, and that's okay. Yeah. And it's okay to recognize that people are built differently, shaped differently, exist or think differently in the world. And we don't need to be afraid of that, because it is remarkably common. A quarter of the adults in the U.S. have a disability, and somehow we're not talking about disability.
It's interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really. And we've been talking in our house so much about your podcast. And by the way, we've declared that you guys have the best podcast title of any parenting podcast, because it makes you stop and think. And thinking about 18 summers in our house, we've had so many discussions, is so emotional. And I think it's worth every parent really stopping to think about that. And I love that's the point that you're approaching parenting and our journeys from. With one of our children, it makes us catch our breath and say, oh, I'm going to cry here. Okay, a lot. So just prepare yourself.
We were late getting on because we were crying, actually. So you're great.
Fantastic. Yeah. Welcome to my life. One of our kids, it's that we are hanging on to, we have 18 summers. And then our other kid, we have forever summers. Mm. He will never be fully independent. And we hope that he will be part of choosing what his future life and what his adulthood looks like. So thinking about, oh, here I go again, 18 summers sums up so beautifully what so many parents of children with disabilities are experiencing, because it really captures what we expect, what we have to recalibrate, and how that can be forever. Even if children are living independently, they may need physical or mental health or financial support that looks different than we imagined. And it is a lot to process and think about when I feel like I can wrap my head around what the 18 summers looks like for my child. And hopefully he'll keep coming back and we'll do family vacations forever and all the things. And then for the other child, my husband and I can't go off and travel because he does need someone there who knows all the medical things for forever. So I guess this is all coming to thank you guys for having the best podcast title out there.
You're sweet, but that's something to think about.
It's endless
summers, you know, for you to think. That. I mean, that got me in the feels too, because you talk about what are the things parents of disabled children have to think about that other parents don't have to think about. That like the endless summers. Like,
that's huge. I've never heard that. I'm going to definitely be having some deep thoughts on my walk later on that one, because I've never heard that. There is something, Kelly, that I've heard that I think you just brought to me very clearly. And this is parents that were very close to, and I know a few of them are probably listening. What they said they've had to be careful of is this son with the disabilities is so important, and everyone in the family loves him. I'm sure his brother loves him. They've said, we have to make sure that we don't discount the other one.
Yes.
And that is something that was like, we've been in some deep retreat rooms where they said, I love him so much, but
they
take
all the attention.
They take all the attention. How do they make sure, like with your other son, he is going to leave. He is going to fly the nest. He's going to come back with great stories and still love his brother. But how are you guys making sure that you're doing the 18 summers with your other son and he doesn't get overshadowed by this other member that everyone loves and wants to cheer on? But do you see what I'm saying? It's something that we've had some pretty emotional family breakouts on. And I mean, I'd love to hear to help all the other parents.
How do you parent in two styles?
How do you navigate that?
Yes. I'm literally, I'm like crying as you're saying this. I'm like, yes, everything you are saying. So the number one thing, you are even jumping into this conversation, you are acknowledging and validating this messiness, this hugely important thing. And first, we need to start from a place of validating the siblings. And exactly like you just said, that I'm parenting two very different styles and children. Many of us, even without disabilities, our children are very different. But it is an everyday consideration of how can we keep both children's needs in mind, knowing that sometimes the metaphorical sirens are going off and we are in full-on epilepsy mode and cleaning up the vomit and calling 911 and like everything is hitting the fan and it is all focused on our younger son, Aaron. For us, what that has looked like, and there'll be many similarities in other families and also differences, validate whatever they're feeling. Never tell them not to feel a certain way. There will be times, and we have not yet experienced this, and we certainly could, siblings, they'll feel the full range of emotions, and it might be boundless love and enthusiasm and all the feels. It might be resentment, anger, jealousy. And if you tell your kid not to feel that way about their sibling or about disability, you are discounting them and their feelings, and they're going to walk away feeling discounted. If you listen and validate what they are going through and model what you hope they will take from this experience, I will never say, boy, epilepsy is the best, isn't it? Man, I just love the meds and the seizures and when the pharmacy messes up. Oh, isn't that great? No, disability is not tragic. But when the pharmacy messes up the epilepsy meds, it's a problem. And as parents, we can acknowledge the reality of all of the things. And I say to both of my kids, I don't say, Aaron, you're real hard because you're disabled, because that's not the reality. The reality is sometimes all of the therapies and the looking for the ankle braces because we can't find them or whatever, like all of the stuff can be hard. And it can be a lot. We start with validating all the things. We model embracing disability in all the things. We embrace going out into the community and doing all the things. And we also fully embrace who Sean is as a non-disabled person. Disability doesn't make his brother a superhero. Therefore, he's just regular kid. Like, nope, they're both just kids. And we absolutely do make time just for Sean, just for him to be a kid and go out for the day with just me, with just dad, where he is choosing the thing. And sometimes the thing he chooses is, let's all go because I want my brother there. Mm-hmm. And other times he wants to go to the beach with the steep steps that his brother can't navigate and go on an explore that is physically not accessible. Yeah. And that's okay too. Just leaning into who he is and validating that experience is everything.
It's huge. What are some other things I just feel like that whole endless summer thing is just, what are some other things that parents of typical neurotypical or physically typical children don't have to worry about that you've had to worry about, that parents with disabled children have to worry about?
The number one thing, I'm laughing as you're saying that, oh my gosh, there's so much paperwork. The amount of, you are applying for the services, hopefully you'll get the services, then every year you have to reapply and do the renewals and the dates and the figuring out, and oh my gosh, the
acronym,
bananas. So it's like, I am learning the full legal rights and things of the special education system. Our son is deep within the system of special education. And the not sleeping for so many of us is such a thing. Our son, sometimes he sleeps great. Other times I am like in the room, in the bed all night on seizure watch, vomit watch, like whatever the watch is of the day. For us, the very real lack of sleep, the mountains of paperwork, and readjusting, recalibrating, not just the, we have forever summers with him. And I told you, we've been talking about you guys a lot because of that. And I just love having that as an entry point. But also for us, some disabilities are visible, some are not visible. So for my son, when we are out in the world, you can see that he is disabled. You can tell he's got something going on. And he is loud and proud with all the things, which is great. And we are on display every time we leave the house. People are looking, they're staring. People are overwhelmingly have been great. But we are always on display. And people are always staring at him because he is in the grocery store and he is squealing loudly and applauding at the cheese because he loves the cheese section and they got good colors and they have great lighting and like that's his jam. So what does that look like and feel like being on display, being the center of all the attention? A big thing for us that has changed how we move through life and especially with our son is, we have just declared if our kids are doing something wrong, ideally they will apologize for themselves or we will certainly apologize for them. But if our kids, and especially if Aaron is doing something that is not wrong, we are not going to apologize. The loud squealing and clapping at the grocery store, the waving and saying hi and getting up a little bit too close and like all of these things, they are not what a typical 10-year-old would be doing, but there's actually nothing wrong with that. And we don't want him to grow up hearing us apologize for him just being him. Mm. And instead, we lean in and we say, hey, my kid's dancing, so he's blocking the whole aisle in Costco. Thank you for understanding. Rather than saying, oh, I'm so sorry, he's blocking the aisle. We say, thank you for understanding. You want to come dance? And people do. People are like, they want the language and the connection and the inroads. And so people do dance. And sometimes they applaud at the cheeses. And inviting people in by saying, thank you for understanding. And I don't even explain, oh, he's disabled. Nope. You know what? He's just really excited to be at the mall and to be on the elevator. thank you for understanding. And it brings people in. And I think that's a distinction that I never thought about before having a kid who is disabled, is that we have to decide, are we, you know, kind of cowering and looking away and like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Or are we leaning in and we're saying, yep, come into our world. And
it's powerful. What a shift.
And that goes right into the last thing I was going to ask you, being lessons for those without disabilities, lessons for people that are not navigating those things in which you've had to navigate. And that's just such a great example. Like, wow, the idea of your child is not doing anything wrong. That's so huge. And I'd like to think we're pretty aware, but the idea of it's beautiful. I love that idea. I just say, oh, thanks for being patient. Oh, we're having a big feels kind of day.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm like, woo, go cheese. It, like, I just think,
yes. You know,
I do that all the time with our 2-year-old or our 7-year-old. If we're super hyped about something, I mean, we get all into the hype dance, and somehow then it's developmentally appropriate. It's still developmentally appropriate if your child develops differently. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's beautiful, a beautiful reminder.
It absolutely is. And for all of us, if your kid is laughing very loudly on the airplane, yep. They're laughing loudly because they are happy. And if someone shoots you the look, like, you know what? I just told them the best dad joke they've ever heard. Thank you for understanding. Do you want to hear the joke?
Yeah.
Or I love that.
Lean in.
To lean in, like you said.
Yeah. And for all of us as parents, how do we lean into the fullness of who our children are, not who we expect or want or hope them to be? Maybe that's not what they want for themselves, and lean into that and see what comes out of that. And I think when you're asking for what is the advice, one big thing that, boy, I wish everybody knew is if someone shares with you that they are disabled, that their child disabled, the, oh, you poor thing, I'm so sorry, I don't know how you do it, that just makes them feel worse. And it makes them then feel like they are having to manage your fragile emotions in addition to whatever is happening with them. So if you are wanting to be a supportive human to other humans, instead of the, oh, I'm so sorry, look even on your face, say, thank you for sharing that with me. How are you feeling? How are you doing? What's your kid up to today? Mm-hmm. It's okay to acknowledge what they just said. You don't have to pretend they didn't just say it, but take your cues from them. And if they say, I am really struggling, I haven't slept in 2 weeks, we can't get into the specialist, we're trying to do a blood test and we can't do that. And it's okay to say, that sounds really hard. I don't know what to say, but I want to be here to support you. So can I buy you an enormous fancy coffee if that's your thing? Or can I walk your dog around the block because you need to just sit on the couch? It's okay to not know what to say. But as soon as we're putting the pity onto the other person, then they're having to manage you in addition to managing everything else. And it's so tiring.
Yeah.
That's such a great reminder in any relationship too, because I think that's such a big real thing. People think they're helping by feeling sorry for you. And that's like terrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we all have our hard things. In my family, we certainly wear the hard thing on our sleeves because it is much more challenging going out into the world with a child who has physical considerations, mental, behavioral, cognitive, when he has all these considerations. And there is so much planning before and during and after, even for a trip to the park or the grocery store. So we do have a lot going on. But that said, we're in a really good place, and it's okay to acknowledge that everybody has hard stuff, but also, like, it's a no BS thing when I'm like, we're good. It's taken us a decade to get here, but like, we're good.
Yeah.
Now, Kelly, your book comes out again, March 12th. Where can we find it? Are we able to pre-order? What's with that?
And we'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. So my book, Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, and its subtitle is Your Guide to the Essential Systems, Services, and Supports. So it's how to, like, actually do the mountain of paperwork and how to actually get and figure out the services. It's available for pre-order, Amazon, Target, all the book places. comes out March 12th. My website, kellycoleman.com, and that's K-E-L-L-E-Y, Coleman, has all my social media and info and everything. And if you do not need this book, I'm sure your library does, or you know someone who does. If you cannot afford this book, call or email your local library, ask them to carry it. The most meaningful thing for me in this book is for people who do not have the money to be able to access the same resources, because we all need the same resources.
That's a great, great.
That's huge.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today and sharing your wisdom. It was a great conversation.
Yeah,
thank you guys for all that you do and for your community. I really love what you've built.
No, thanks, Kelly. So much, that was really great. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.